And welcome, everyone. This is Sal Ferlazzo here with Tara Moffitt. Hello, Tara.
Good morning, Sal.
And welcome to the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. You've been waiting for a whole week to listen to the lawyers at the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Firm. Tara was scheduled today, and Jay Gervin was scheduled to be with her. But I haven't seen you guys in a while, so I asked Jay to let me come in and visit and say hello. We've got some listeners from Florida, I understand, Joanne and Lee. Hello down there. I hope you're having a wonderful day. We're going to have weather in what, the mid-40s today. It's a heat wave in Albany, and global warming is really coming to Albany today, but it's better than it could be, but not quite as nice as...
I think you're going to hold off on the tank tops.
Not though. Quite as nice as Vero Beach, so I want to welcome them and all the listeners to the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. For the new listeners, Gervin and Ferlazzo is a law firm. We do a general practice of law in various areas, including personal injury, commercial litigation, real estate, education law, which is what Tara's specialty is, Social Security disability, labor and employment. We do a lot of that. We're litigators. We go to court. And in fact, it's funny, Tara, people say, I was at the bank the other day, and they said, oh, what kind of lawyer are you? And I said, well, I sue people like you. And she just looked at me and we laughed but we do, and we defend people, and we, you know, sue companies, and when people have disputes, they look to lawyers, and that's what we do.
I also do a lot of preventive work to hopefully try to keep some of our other clients out of having to be sued. So there's the flip side of where lawyers are awesome and helpful.
Right. Now, lawyers can be helpful, and litigation lawyers can be helpful too, because many cases settle. I just resolved the case, which we'll be chatting about as time goes on. But we're a general practice firm. We're located at 20 Corporate Woods Boulevard in Albany, New York. We've been doing this show since September of 2001. And we're here to chat with you at 476-1300, 476-1300. Before we start, I do want to thank people for the kind words and gestures. My mom passed away earlier in the month, and I missed the show and was unable to do some things at work. And I've gotten a lot of cards and calls, and I really appreciate it. And I know, Tara, you went through this pretty recently yourself. And it is very comforting to know that, you know, the people who listen are as kind as, you know, we would want them to be. So thank you, folks. And I was listening to the earlier show with Sandy and the counsel on there. And I'm now an executor, so I know what it's like to go through those kind of issues. But we're here today to chat about any topics you want. I do want to chat about some of the personal injury things that we do. We kind of keep that as a focus of the show, but we handle other issues as they come up. 476-1300, 476-1300. And I know that number, but Paul Vandenberg always tells me if we throw the number out, people somehow magically get their little fingers on the phone, or they dial the speed button that calls here, and we'll be happy to chat on any topic or if you have any comments about general things. Tara, how's life treating you in the fast lane of education and special ed?
It's been very good. This is kind of the springtime for school districts in the area of special education, which is where I practice. We're doing a lot of training and preventive work with districts to try to make sure as changes in law come up and as new developments are occurring, we're trying to make sure people are aware. We do a lot of professional development with our staff and teachers to bring them up to speed on changes in terms of disability law, issues involving students who are homeless, and whatever other topics are kind of in the know. Bullying, school bullying issues are obviously a very hot button topic, and we do a lot of work with our districts to try to, you know, help them promote some best practices and to try to, you know, continue to set the right model and the right tone in terms of what and how we are addressing those, you know, very challenging issues as they come up in our school district. So it's been busy, but I love what I do. So it's every day's a joy.
Yeah, I haven't seen Tara in, it seems like, weeks. Tara's here. Hi, what's your name again, ma'am? We do municipal work as well. I'm a municipal attorney, and school law is like representing towns and villages. It's general practice. It's labor and employment. I had an interesting board meeting the other night, and we talked about a media policy, social media policy Facebook.
Hot button
which
issues.
Is a very hot issue. And you know, once you get your little, feet into the waters of Facebook, with municipalities because they have to honor First Amendment rights. It's very complicated and very dicey.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the schools.
We have a lot of those same balance questions. Again, you know, you're walking the line between ensuring people have the right for First Amendment expression in terms of, you know, hey, I like this, I don't like this, but we also are looking at issues of, you know, confidentiality involving student information. What if board members are expressing opinions? Does that suggest that that's the opinion of the board or the opinion of the individual? And it's difficult, I think, in a lot of ways for people to separate the person from the position that they hold. And so we get a lot of comments and feedback about what they saw a teacher or a staff member or, you know, I'm sure in the towns and villages,
yes.
You know, does this represent the town's policy or practice? And, you know, trying to make sure that we've set reasonable framework where you balance between rights of expression and also what the obligations are related to employment and making sure you're not, you know, creating a message or an issue.
You got comments, you got replies, you got people, you know, spinning out of control. It can be very difficult. But it's not difficult to call us at 476-1300.
You had mentioned that you had a recent personal injury.
Yeah, I did.
Success.
In fact,
brag away.
Well, I don't want to brag, but it's just something which it illustrates things. We like to talk about this on the show. And by the way, if you want to check out our new website, the personal injury area has been updated by Daniel Rubin, who is the kind of the head of our personal injury department. I work in various departments, and obviously my name's on the door, but we have different people who have different specialties, and Daniel's is personal injury. He's a vibrant young attorney, and we have a new attorney, Matt Tullio, in the office, who's really wonderful. He's such a good guy, and his wife works for the Legal Aid Society,
yes.
And we're going to have them both on
love her.
Together. Oh, she's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I teased her, actually, when I met her. She's very vibrant and exciting. I said, you know, I may like you more than your husband. And, and we laughed, and I like them both.
Matthew, we love you. You're all right.
We love them both.
No worries.
And so we have calls already? Look at this. Who do we have?
We have a call from Liz from East Greenbush.
Okay, Liz. Good morning.
Good morning, Phil. Haven't talked to you in a long time.
I know it's been a while.
Sorry about your mom.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Sal, a lady called Paul's show yesterday, and I have a question about what she called in regards to her child. She's homeschooling her child.
Mm-hmm.
And the child would like to play sports, though.
Yeah.
He's not allowed to go to the public schools to play sports.
Well, Tara can handle this because this is an area.
You just
lost me when you said homeschool.
Well,
go ahead, Tara.
Liz, it's actually, you know, homeschooling is a very interesting area, and it's basically recognizing by the state that parents have the right to elect to send their child to a public school or to make alternative arrangements, which could be a private or a parochial school. Or they could also elect to do homeschooling. If you homeschool your child, you have to meet certain requirements in terms of, you know, what you're teaching, not, you know, you have to meet all of these specifics and you put it together in a plan. The district reviews it. And once that's approved, that becomes your child's plan of study. But what's interesting is when you talk about homeschooling versus public school, there are certain supports and services that are in place for children who are attending the public school because it's designed to, you know, promote the community aspects of that. There, you know, the reason why districts do not typically have homeschooled children participate in their extracurricular and, you know, band and other activities is because it's not part of the typical practice that student has to integrate and, you know, develop that communion with the other students because they're being homeschooled. There was actually a case called Bradstreet v. Sobel back when the Commissioner of Education was Commissioner Sobel, where they were raising that issue. A parent of a homeschooled child wanted their child to be able to participate in extracurricular and special activities outside of the school day, and the courts in the Third Department ruled that that wasn't necessary because the purpose of those activities is to really encourage, you know, camaraderie and communion with the students. Now, there are, you can talk to your school boards and they could look at whether they want to make a adjustment to their district's practice, but under the law, it's not something that the districts are required to do.
Can I say something now?
Please.
People are taxpayers. Why would you Well, then they don't have to pay taxes then, right?
No, parents have the right to elect to send their child to a public or a private or to homeschool. When you elect to send your child to a private or a parochial school, you still have to pay taxes because you're a resident of the district, but you can elect to determine how you want your child to be educated, and most of those programs will still charge.
I understand what you're saying, but I do say it's not a fair situation, and it is a law. They actually have a law that says, I know you talked about that
case, yeah.
Sobel or something.
Sobel.
Mm-hmm. Broad Street v. Sobel.
That can't be revisited, and
anything can be revisited.
Yeah, that was a case from, you know, I think it was like maybe in 98, may have been a little bit earlier, but it's a long-standing case and interpretation about that. And you know, you're not the first to raise issues and concerns about this, you know, citing the very same things. I'm a taxpayer. You know, and again, it's the way that the law has been, you know, established and what the requirements are is, you know, if you have a child who is attending, you know, the public school, they get access to all of the supports and services in the public school. Now, what's different is when you homeschool your child, you don't have to meet all of those same requirements and standards to the same level. You have to teach certain subjects, you have to meet certain criteria hours, and you have to submit a plan. But whereas in the school district, we have very specific requirements that you have to teach, you know, character education. You have to teach very specific components within your health curriculum. You have to meet certain requirements within, you know, the subject areas. You have more flexibility if you're homeschooling. So there is a trade-off in terms of your opportunities to make those choices.
What was that statement you made about character? Schools are teaching character?
Character
education. It's part of just basically teaching community, teaching respect, teaching tolerance.
Oh, they get a big F on that for me.
Well, character is not easy. But Liz, thanks for calling. It's always good to hear from you. Take care over there in East Greenbush. And character is in the eye of the beholder, because there's a lot of nice people. And what we see sometimes, I think Liz is concerned that, and I know you see some really good kids, Tara, and some good teachers. Mm-hmm. We read about the bad ones, and you read in a paper that this person did this wrong or that wrong. And then you just, you know, unfortunately, the good kids, you don't see the good news. You don't see the teacher good news. And, in fact, one of the things I've talked about is I think we should start kind of promoting some, you know, students and teachers from a lot of our districts, you know, who have done wonderful things, and give them a few moments to shine, because there's a lot more good going on than you realize. And, unfortunately, the papers, you know, they have to focus on fake news and all this other stuff, and it just it doesn't.
I believe they're called alternative facts.
Yeah,
so.
I like. Well, we get that in the law all the time. In fact, I want to talk about that in our second half hour. But before we get a few more calls, and again, the number is 476-1300. I want people to realize just because you're elderly, if you're in your 80s or your 90s or your, you know, late 70s, you do have rights, you know, for compensation when you're injured. A lot of older people break hips. Mm-hmm. They get, you know, fixated and the hardware. And many times they just move on and they just suffer. And that can be catastrophic for people. But I just settled a case this week where we were able to obtain considerable compensation for somebody came in, they installed a unit in a person's home, and they weren't careful with the way they maintained it. The unfortunate homeowner was injured, severely injured, and was in the hospital and rehab and pain and suffering. There's always contributory negligence, and that's the big argument you're fighting over, because these insurance companies will say, oh, well, they're in their 80s, they didn't walk well, and they had unsteady gait, and that may all be true, but that doesn't excuse improper conduct. So the big fight, and it is a fight for elderly people, because they have arthritis already, they have all these ailments that have built up over the years, and the insurance companies will try to say, well, it wasn't the fault of the fall, it was the fault of, you know, not drinking milk for 30 years or whatever other reason they come up with. It is something which you can win if you pursue yourself. And the other fight there, Tara, is with the insurance company. In this case in particular, there was a major lien, over $60,000. But we were able to reduce that lien well below that, well than half below that, to get the matter resolved. So when you're dealing with these cases, it's tricky, it's complicated, but it's very satisfying when someone who's injured is able to recoup and, you know, maybe get their life a little bit more back in shape. So if you have any questions about the, you know, personal injury practice, you can contact our web. We get a lot of inquiries right off the web, www.gervinlaw.com. Or call us at 462-0300. Ask for Daniel Rubin or myself, Sal Ferlazzo, or Matt Tullio. And if you want to talk to us today on that topic or any topic, it's 476-1300. Did we have another caller?
We actually have a couple of callers. Whoa, we must have said something that created a hotline issue.
What did I say?
It's your dulcet tones.
Well, who is it? Who do we have?
We have Pete from Niskayuna.
Pete, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning. First of all, Sal, I'm sorry to hear about your mom.
Well, thank you, Pete, very much.
My condolences.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted to call and comment to the one caller from East Greenbush.
Yes.
About the homeschooler. Well, I'm sure you understand why I got more school, but a lot of people are probably in the same boat that I'm in right now. My son's out of school. He's out of college. On his own. I'm still paying school tax.
Sure, I am in the same boat.
So it's like the argument can be made that way. And you still got to pay. You got to live somewhere, right?
That's right.
So that's all I wanted to say. And
I appreciate that.
I offer my condolences.
Well, you know what? Thank you for calling. It's awful kind of you. And, you know, you and all the listeners have been so kind. I can't thank you enough. It really makes a tough time a lot easier to know how kind people can be.
Yeah.
Who's our next caller?
We have Liz from Kinderhook.
Hello there, Liz.
Hi. How are you?
Doing fine. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thank you. Question about, well, let me just give you a little background. I own a home in a 15-lot subdivision that includes a private dirt road that's still owned by the developer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I've dealt with this way too often.
It's a mess.
It's never. Well, it is a mess. Go ahead. What's your mess look
well,
like, or what's the issue?
The deed itself includes an easement for the ingress and egress on the right-of-way, which is the private road,
right,
on the condition that the lot owner pays a share of the cost of, you know, maintenance, insurance, and taxes to the road owner. There's no homeowners association. So recently, in the past few years, responsibility for maintenance and repairs has fallen on the homeowners themselves because the owner of the road grew tired of collecting money from everyone.
Right.
And they tried to actually get somebody on the road to, you know, buy the road for a dollar, which really would be a stupid move on anybody's part. My lot borders the road, but my access to my lot is via a town road, not the private road.
Wow.
There are currently talks going on with the homeowners and the town to take over the road. The town would agree to this if the road is paved to town specs.
Right.
The cost of doing that would be split among the 15 lots.
Right.
That cost is estimated to be between $15,000 and $20,000.
Each?
Yes.
Well, each,
each person or so complete or
each
total?
Each lot.
Each lot. Okay, right. So 15,000 times 15, that's a lot of 15.
Well, this must be a very long
road. They're estimated somewhere between 200 and 300,000 for the bringing it up to town specs and paving.
Yeah, town specs, and that's what we do in the towns that I'm involved in. Usually when you have the subdivision, initially, we've got 4 minutes, right?
Oh, okay. I thought it was 4 seconds.
usually you've got, you know, when you get a subdivision, it's best, you know, and a lot of developers, what they do is they want to sell off the lots, and then they run out of money, and then they leave. So it's really, I don't encourage people to buy houses on private lot roads because they just create, as you can see,
an
extra down payment.
Yeah.
So are you concerned about, well, you don't really need it. You're not even in that boat because your access is there, although.
According, the town attorney said that a yes vote by the majority of the owners would allow this, would bind all owners to move forward with this. They won't even give us the cost up front. You got to vote first. But since I don't use the road, you know, again, my question is, am I legally bound to participate in this? The town attorney has indicated, because I did ask this question, that this has been tested in courts in the past. And, yes, I am bound. There's no opting out. Is
Here's the deal, and I hope I wasn't the town attorney.
No.
Okay, just making sure it wasn't me. I forget sometimes, folks.
No.
What you should do when the town attorney or any attorney says to you we have cases that say this, get a copy of the case. I've not researched that. Mm-hmm. I happen to think my instincts are, and this is an instinct, not a legal judgment, is that it's not as clear as he or she said it was.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's probably cases that say, you know, the people in the subdivision, may or may not have to go with the majority, but you're not using it. So,
right.
I mean, the worst they can do is restrict you from using it,
right.
But you're not using it. So
right.
Your unique situation may be an exception. And many times people give the general rule. The general rule is X, but there's always an exception to the general rule and then an exception to the exception, which brings it back to the general rule.
Okay.
So what you should ask for is a copy of the basis, the law, the statute, the case. And then if you want to contest that, you can call us and, you know, we can help you or any attorney can help you advocate. It's $15,000, so it's a lot of money you could save.
It's a lot of money.
So, but to begin with, ask them.
Okay.
And there's something called the Association of Towns, which the town can, and I use them for guidance as well. They've been through this millions of times throughout the state for various towns. They may also have a database, which the town attorney has access to. So, before Liz before you start throwing big money around,
yeah.
I would make sure that there's a basis for it.
Okay.
Just don't say it because a lawyer said it.
Okay.
That's the teaching lesson here.
All right, very good. And if I need you, I'll call you.
Okay, be happy to chat with you and enjoy yourself in Kinderhook. It's
okay.
A nice area.
Yes,
1 minute
beautiful.
To go. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Liz.
Bye now. This is the Gervin and Fralanza Law Show, it's kind of fun to be a municipal attorney because it raises lots of issues, whether it was Facebook the other day or here, private roads. And that brings in a real estate component, too, which
mm-hmm.
is what we also do. We do a lot of commercial work as well. The law is exciting. There's always like problems and you got to solve the problem. And so even though I'm a litigator and I like to sue people, like most of you out there, no, I'm only kidding. I don't sue all of you, just
yeah.
some of you. It is a great system, Tara, because, we're not getting guns and shooting people like they do out west. We're civilly arguing and then whoever wins or loses either appeals or moves on. But it's a good system because there's certain disputes that people have and people can disagree and we're fortunate to be able to have authority that we can look to and live with and move on. Unlike the presidential election where people still fight, but we in the litigation world can just take a loss and move on or take
and
a victory
on
and move
on. On that note, let's take a break.
Let's take
way
a break.
To rile them up on the way out.
Bye, folks. We'll be right back after the news.
Gervin and Fralanza Law Show.
Here we are, the Gervin and Fralanza Law Show.
We have the illustrious Sal.
The fastest hour in everything, in radio. First of all, it's not an hour. It starts at 7 after, and we get 3 minute break. So it's probably 50 minutes of legal talk. And, we're happy to chat with you guys. And actually, Tara, I do miss it. I enjoy coming on. I was, out of town yesterday. I had run down to Newburgh for a deposition, and then I met a gentleman in Woodbury area for a personal injury action. It was a worker who got hurt, and he had comp, but he also got hurt at somebody else's a building and fractured several ribs, and we're going to help him try to get some compensation because he's a union guy, and even being out that week that month, he lost all sorts of different benefits and credits And it has an impact on people. When people live paycheck to paycheck, you lose four weeks and you have all that suffering. It is certainly not a pleasant thing. So the personal injury world, I know some people view it as a lottery and as a joke and they're just not happy with it. But when you're injured yourself, folks, you will realize, or if you have family members, it ages you, and many times permanently, and, mm-hmm. and it can be very difficult. So, it is an area which we've been doing more and more of. We are not quite at the level of the TV advertisers where you hear every word you hear is this or that or the other thing, but we have a different style, and Daniel is intending to continue his career, and I'm going to work with him and Matt and we are going to be just more well known because the quality of the work is fabulous.
Yeah, I mean,
he does a wonderful job with clients, and we've had very good success over the years of taking cases that are, you know, aren't the easy cases, the low, you know, yielding fruit, and making them successful by sheer just persistence. And a lot of the stuff with the insurance carriers, it's I've given lectures on this to other attorneys. A lot of it is just personality driven. If you work with the insurance carriers and you explain to them and prove, you know, what your case is about, and you work with them and you make it an enjoyable experience, that they're more willing to work with you and to give you the higher levels of discretion, as opposed to if you're a jerk, you know, what goes around comes around.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right in terms of the approach and the communication style of the attorney is a big factor in pretty much any case. You know, sometimes people pick their attorney on who they think is most likely to be, you know, the most aggressive. And I have to say, sometimes that can backfire, with the court or with opposing counsel. Because
yes.
if you are, if you're discourteous, if you are refusing to cooperate, if you are delaying things because you just won't come to agreement, it can actually end up creating more problems and reducing the successfulness of the outcome for your clients. Yeah. And that's a really important thing to think about.
So what you need to be is sort of Sybil. There was an old TV show where she had all sorts of different personalities. And, you know, when you're in court, you need to fight. But prior to being in court, or if you're in a deposition and other aspects, you do even better by not being, you know, a crazy street fighter. When you get to court, you've got to scrape and fight and make sure you know, protect your client's rights as much as possible. But if you're a jerk, people dislike you. And if they dislike you as the attorney, that filters over to the client.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to present a team and work hard, though. But you got to be aggressive. We start off with very high demands so that we can. And really, that's really one of the keys, actually, with all the experience I've had for 30 years of doing this. One of the keys is to make sure that the other side, the insurance company, creates a large enough pot. It's called a reserve. And if you can immediately show how strong your case is, and to, you know, provide them with information, they'll have a higher reserve. So if they reserve $100,000, it'll be easier to settle the case for 100, 120, 150. But if they view the case as worthless and they put 10,000 as a reserve, it's really hard to get them to go to the 200, 300, 400 level. So there's a trick in this, and just, you know, smiling away and just being, you know, a happy-go-lucky advertiser is not going to get you there. You know, really, it's hard work. And one of the differences we have, just before we finish up and go to other topics, is we don't want a reputation. We don't have one. We don't want one of, well, we'll take an easy case and we'll just take a quick dollar and go. Because insurance companies then know that when you're negotiating, they have knowledge about you, which they're going to use against you and your clients. So we don't like to take the first offer. We don't take the first offer. We scramble. We hang out. I want to wait until the damages are literally documented. I've been told people the last 2 weeks, you know, we're not settling this case for 6 months or a year. We don't want to think about it because I need to know what your permanency is. I don't want to know, you know, if we can grab 80,000 now instead of, you know, 400 next year. I mean, we want to get as much as possible for people. It's only the right way to do it. When you try to, you know, make quick cash and get cash and just cash out, you're signaling the insurance company that, hey, you know what, we'll offer them 40,000. They're going to take it because they're afraid to go to court or they don't want to go to court. We don't have to go to court, but we're happy to if we need to. So 476-1300, a little bit about inside baseball and how we practice in the area of personal injury and litigation. And do we have a caller here?
We do. We have a caller, Jerry from Colony.
Hello there, Jerry, and
good
welcome
morning,
to the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. Tara Moffitt, Sal Ferlazzo.
Good morning.
Hi.
What kind of question do you have?
Well, I have a question. I have a house that I'm planning on renting.
Yes.
And I was wondering, do I need to have a separate corporation or an LLC to protect myself in that situation?
Well, you want to rent a house for personal use?
No, I want to rent it out.
Oh, so you have a home and you want to rent it
yes.
to someone. Well,
yes.
Who owns the home? Who is the owner of the home?
I am the owner.
Okay. So the owner is going to be responsible to maintain the property in reasonable shape. So you have two choices. You can get a lot of insurance and make sure the insurance covers, you know, you adequately, which is really the very best thing to do. For double insurance, in essence, you could create an LLC, transfer the property to the LLC, and then rent it through the LLC. And then what happens there is if worse comes to worse and there's a catastrophic injury or what have you that's not covered by your insurance, the most you'll lose is the asset of the LLC. You walk away from the LLC, for example. So it really, in many ways, depends on if you have adequate insurance. If you do, then you'll be fine. And you also have to be a reasonable homeowner. You can't just, you know, you have to inspect it occasionally, put in the lease that they're are obligated to get insurance. But you just have to go by and inspect. If you see something dangerous happening there and you don't take corrective action, you could get obviously sued.
Okay, now, are we talking more than just homeowner's insurance?
Well, there's homeowners and then there's umbrella. There's two, and the umbrella covers car and home. So what I really highly recommend, and it's really cheap, is to get umbrella coverage over any other thing that you have.
I do have an umbrella policy now.
How much is it?
I think it's $3 million.
Okay, that's pretty good. Most people go a mil or two, sometimes five. And it depends on the use. If you're renting to a commercial business that has, you know, ladders and things and people can get really hurt, you know, be careful. And in fact, we've actually been retained to defend a case, which we'll talk about after our call is done, about just roofs and people being responsible for roofs, potentially, and workers' comp for people who get hurt on roofs. But in your case, you're going to rent it to some people who are going to be home, you know, a couple with a couple of kids, and they're going to just live in the home. If you've had it structurally reviewed to make sure there's floors aren't going to fall in, there isn't mold, there isn't lead paint. You know, the lead paint's the area where you get most in trouble with.
It's been totally gutted in the model.
Yeah, I would say if you have $3 million of umbrella, you have $500,000 or whatever of under insurance, you're going to be fine.
Does my umbrella? I mean, this is it's not my principal residence. I have the homeowners on there. Does my umbrella cover that house under the homeowners?
You should double check. Most umbrellas cover the home. I don't know if the product covers rental property. It definitely would not cover it if you had an LLC. You'd have to get separate umbrella coverage for that.
Right. But since I'm renting it out, does my umbrella cover that?
I would ask your – that's an insurance issue, which I would have to read your policy. And okay. I don't know what your policy says. But you should talk to your insurance agent and get a very specific answer and get it in writing. Just don't say, oh, yeah, that's what it is. Too many people come to us. And by the way, one last thing to make sure, since we're doing the insurance audit here, which we do frequently and I think makes a lot of sense – there's something called underinsurance in your homeowners or your auto policy, which you really should get. You have that?
I have that.
You do. You already know your stuff. I mean, you can be used to educate other people. Underinsured is where folks, people have the minimum. In fact, I have a case where somebody from Massachusetts, where the minimum is 20, hit somebody here in Albany. I talked to the carrier this week and because of a unique part of their policy, they'll cover the minimum of New York, which is 25. But it's still not enough to cover the injuries of the accident that I have. So fortunately, the person that I'm representing has already bought, before the accident, underinsured coverage. So to the extent that there's you go through after the first insurance company, and then you go after your own for the difference, and that's something which just will benefit you, and it sounds like you already have it. So you're in good shape. I would talk to your insurance company, make sure that they put it in writing, because too often people say that's what it is, and then the agent leaves, and then, you know, you're stuck holding the bag.
Right, right. Great.
Okay.
So it looks like I won't go with the LLC because it probably saved me a couple bucks. Having enough insurance.
I don't think you need an LLC. And the other thing, which is really the most important, is just be careful. If you see any obvious, you know, known dangers, just, you know, have it fixed. Just don't ignore it, and then no one will get injured to begin with, which is right. The best case scenario.
I had one quick question, Jerry, which is, are you renting multiple properties or just the one?
Just just the one.
Okay, because that also would be a different factor in terms of whether or not you would want to look to an LLC, because obviously the more you know, rental, the more potential liability, and so that is an important thing
but
to think about.
Now, be careful too, now, Jerry, because you're this is not your primary home. There's under the law, and we've been fighting this case. Daniel and I are actually defending a person downstate in the New York area. If you're a homeowner and you own a single family home or two family home, and somebody comes in and is doing roof work and they fall off the roof, you know, and they you know, you're not their employer. You don't need to have workers' compensation for them. But however, if you have a business and your rental situation here could be considered a business, you may be responsible for their workers' compensation coverage. So if you, for example, have a roofer come in, and make sure that they have coverage already.
Right.
And that's important for anybody who has a joint business slash residence. And in this, it's purely a business, not a residence. It's not your residence. So that's just something where there's a single family exemption to the workers' compensation rule. And since we talked about it, it was somewhat related, I wanted to throw that in too. Okay, Jerry, thanks for calling.
When a contractor says they're fully insured, does that include workman's comp?
Yes, but like I just said, even with the insurance company, you want a copy of their certificate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People say I'm insured. A lot of people who, you know, bring blacktop around, and no offense to all of them, but many of them just bring blacktop and they go to the next level and they keep on, you know, blacktopping people. Oh, we're fully insured. It says right on their truck. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean it is. It just means they said it. It's fake news. Okay. Nice chatting. Take care, Jerry.
Bye, Jerry. Looks like we have another caller. We have Kathy from Albany.
What a busy day. Hello there, Kathy.
Hey.
Is this the mayor?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Same nationality, but not, no.
Just wondering. I was wondering what you're going to do with that $12 million or something.
Yeah, I know.
You want to call up Paul Vandenberg. He can just write a check for that in a second.
Sure,
just ask Paul. He'll help the city. You know how much he loves the city.
He's a giver.
Yeah.
He's a big old giver.
Oh, sure.
So what do you got going there, Kathy?
I basically have a question, and it's kind of controversial. And if you don't want to answer it, that's fine.
What's the question?
Well, the question is what's your opinion of the new Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos?
Wow.
That's why I said it was controversial.
I don't have an opinion because I really... Tara has an opinion. And,
well, that's what I figured.
I have no idea because I don't really focus on the educational world. I do litigation. But Tara, go ahead. We got some floor.
You know, Kathy, I think that it's been, you know, there has been a lot of controversy over Ms. DeVos and her appointment. Obviously, it was a land-breaking appointment, considering the fact that it required the first time that the vice president had to vote to affirm in 200-plus years history. So that's kind of an interesting thing. You know, in terms of a lot of the school districts that I work with and represent, there is a lot of concern about the potential approach that we'll be taking from the direction of Ms. DeVos. There is concern in terms of how and what she sees as the vision. And in terms of, there's always a good idea in terms of trying to make sure that we have flexibility built in to give districts and states and municipalities some flexibility to try to make sure that we don't miss the key mission, which is to educate children and make sure that they're getting prepared to become adults. But Ms. DeVos is a big supporter of some of the things that, in my experience, have detracted from some of the benefits of public education. The more there are vouchers, the more they are taking money out of the funds that would otherwise go to the public schools and potentially, you know, impact your ability to offer more and more programs. It's, you know, everyone has the ability, notwithstanding their background and pedigree, to become a wonderful and helpful person. I'm just very hesitant and quite concerned in terms of what I've seen and from the interviews that she did and the comments that she made.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Leave me kind of, you know, keeping me up at night.
Well, the concern that I have is dealing with students with disabilities.
Yeah, that
I am not in the school district. I mean, I'm not in the in the education field, but I am legally blind myself. I know a lot of legally blind. I know a lot of TVIs. I know a lot of people that, and schools, private and state, and, you know, we're just concerned about, you know, what's going to happen to them down the road.
Well, I can offer some degree of reassurance in terms of where we are right now, because there are a number of federal laws that apply to school districts and municipalities that relate to the protection and rights of individuals with disabilities as the law currently stands.
Right.
One is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act.
Right, IDEA.
Which, yep, IDEA.
Yep.
And that ensures that children between the ages of 0 and 21, and the 0 to 3 is kind of, let's set that aside because that's a early intervention level. But from 3 to 21, preschool up through the end of eligibility for public school, there are certain rights and responsibilities that a district has to do. And what's interesting is under the IDEA, the obligation exists regardless of the amount of funding that's available. So if in order to ensure access, supports, and services for individuals with disabilities, you may need to provide materials in an alternate format. So,
right.
For example, you mentioned that you have a visual impairment. That may mean making sure we have access to assistive technology devices, making sure we have large print books, making sure we have books available in alternate formats such as Braille, in order to ensure that that student, notwithstanding their disability, has the same ability to access important information, reports, and services.
Yeah.
The other laws that we have that relate to protection of individuals with disabilities are the Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act and also the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yep.
Those two laws kind of match hand in hand when it comes to its application to public schools, and those also require that any program that receives federal funds must ensure that no individual, based on the fact that they have a disability that substantially limits major life activities, is precluded from benefits and participation in those programs.
So Kathy, you can see with people like Tara, there's going to be protections out there. There's not going to be. I think people get overly concerned, and this president more than others has really caused a lot of people just to fear things.
Yeah.
But I think the proof is in the pudding, and Congress is there. There's checks and balances. There's the courts.
Yeah.
So while people can be fearful, I just hope it doesn't get so fearful that we just can't work together to do what's in the best interest of the children, which is really what we're all here. That's what it's for, and everybody has the same goal.
It was really scary when people were asking her the questions about IDEA and all that. She had no clue.
She had no idea.
No clue. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is scary.
Yeah, there was definitely a lack of
I guess that disqualifies me from the from being Secretary of Education.
There seemed to have been a lack of prep or a lack of understanding.
Again,
understanding education law and understanding in particular education laws that applies to individuals with disabilities is a huge topic. It's what I've been doing for almost 18 years, and it's what I do all day, every day, and spend a lot of time, studying it, which is why this information is kind of, handy to me. But it is something that has a huge impact. And one of the best things about, what I think is one of the best things about our country is that we guarantee that any individual has a right to a free, appropriate public education, and that includes access and education to individuals with disabilities, and that we do not exclude. We include and we provide supports and accommodations, and that makes, that is something that we should be proud of. I know that sometimes the public school systems get a knock here and there, but what they do and how they do it is, really a commitment and a testament to the work that is put into by the teachers, by the administrators, by the boards that are donating their time. Board members do tons of work for school districts, and, they're doing it on a volunteer basis, and it can take hours and hours and hours every month, but they're doing it because they believe in the importance of supporting the public education system. And that is why, we are always hopeful that we can make sure that we're moving in a positive direction. And to me, making sure that we're focused on the key point, which is educating kids and making sure that they're getting the skills and the information they need to be successful when they leave, and are able to get jobs or move about as independently as possible, depending upon where their scope of disability is.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
thank you. And Have a nice day. It's good to hear from you, Mayor. It's always good to hear you call us. Anytime you want, you call us. Anytime you want, call us at the Governor for Lazo Law Show. We'll set the city straight.
I like it.
Thanks again. Take care.
Bye, now.
Okay, folks, 476-1300 is the number. I don't know that we're going to have any time. Oh, we have one last minute caller. It must be the real mayor saying, "Hey, wait a second."
She's like,
now.
"Wait a second. Wait, that wasn't a my second. Question." And let's be honest, you know, Kathy was a plant. No, just kidding.
No, okay. She certainly was from, you know, your background, which is very impressive, and it's always instead of Wikipedia, we have Terapedia here. I mean, she just knows this stuff. And it's the same way in the office, folks. We'll have lunch. Well, I ask a question. She'll give me like a 5 or 10 minute answer on something like, you know, how tall is some bridge out in Utah or something, or like the longest spanned bridge.
I'm a fan of facts. All right. She knows facts. We have one more. We have Beth from Schenectady. Let's try to fit her in. Hi, Beth.
Welcome.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, indeed.
Hear you fine.
Okay, great. I moved from one room to another. I think it's a year ago today, I was bitten by a dog in my driveway.
Okay.
I was getting my vehicle to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Friends and family advised me, you know, you should contact a lawyer. So I did, a local well-known lawyer.
Yes.
They followed me through the care.
Okay, we're losing you a little bit, Beth. So go back to the first room.
Pardon?
We lost you a little bit. So you hired a lawyer, and what was the concern?
I hired the lawyer, and they dismissed the case after several months of following me with my care, saying that they just didn't think they could help me.
Okay.
So my concern, and they kept telling me, we sent a letter. It turned out to be my neighbor's dog that I didn't know at the time that it happened. So they kept sending letters to the tenant, which was the owner of the dog, the tenant's landlord.
Right.
Because they knew he owned several properties in the area, but they never got a response from him, and that was annoying to me because I didn't realize it was that simple to just, you know, just not respond to a letter and not be held liable. So I'm just wondering if I should pursue it with a different lawyer.
Do you have significant injuries?
The bite was to the bone.
Ooh.
It took a long time to heal, and I have nerve damage now.
What about the propensities of the dog? Did it have dangerous propensities? Because that's the standard. The dog has to have known propensities.
Had it bitten somebody before?
Was it dangerous? Did it bark? We represent, and there's only a minute to go, but we've represented mail carriers on these very issues. Why don't you call me on Monday?
Okay, 462. We go through the city court system, and they did end up putting the dog down. They deemed it as dangerous.
Oh, my gosh. Then you sound like you have a great case. I don't understand why this would not be pursued. You know what? I don't know who the well-known attorney was, but we've done this before with other well-known firms and had good results. It depends on the facts. 462-0300 is a phone number. My name is Sal Furlanzo, and I'm in Monday. Give me a call. Tell me that you're Beth or whoever your real name is, if it's not
that
Beth.
It is Beth.
It is Beth. Okay. And my real name is Sal. So call me on Monday, and then I'll bring you in the office, and we'll meet, and you're fine. We'll find a way to get it done, and hopefully it'll be another success story. So thank you for calling, Beth, and have a nice day.
All right. Bye, Beth.
Okay. Folks, just because you're told no by one lawyer doesn't mean you just take a no. I mean, if you have serious, significant injuries and you know the standard, keep on fighting. Don't give up. That's the key. That's the way our office deals with. You can see Tara will never give up on the IDEA and helping kids, and I won't give up on helping to fight for people who are injured like Beth. And we won't give up talking to you.
All
this
right.
is the Governor for Lazo Law Show. Tara, thank you.
Thank you, Sal.
Great
Have a good afternoon, everyone.
Bye, folks.